You're listening to WBH Radio, your host William Holly, episode 56. Joining me today is a gentleman I met when I was a graduate student at Brooklyn College. Our lives have been kind of intertwining since through youth basketball, high school basketball, and that's my man, Tariq Tuzgini. Did I get it right?
It was like a solid B+.
Solid B+.
A- range.
We call him Taz, man. Forgive me.
There we go. That's cool, too.
My man, Taz. Welcome to the show, man. How you feeling?
I'm good, man. Happy to be here.
You ever been on a podcast before?
No.
You nervous? What?
No, actually, not. I didn't. When I was younger, my friend had a like wrestling podcast, but I was in like ninth grade. I don't know.
All right, man. Appreciate you stopping in. Ladies and gentlemen, even if you're not familiar with the New York City high school basketball scene, you can relate to somebody accomplishing their dreams, their goals. And that's what my man Taz did in the fall of 2019, being named head varsity basketball coach. Where, Taz?
Wingate High School. Right? Got the hoodie on, got the hat on.
Word up. Before that, you were working as an assistant.
Yes, sir.
Where at?
At Adams Street Academy, okay. Downtown Brooklyn.
Okay. So how did it feel to be named head coach of your own program?
Yeah, it was everything I really worked for. You know, I remember being in college thinking to myself, like, all right, I'm go to school to teach phys ed and I want to coach basketball. That was really, I mean, not too many people get to say they're living their dreams or loving their work, but I'm happy to be able to say I could do that right now.
That's dope, man. I know in grad school, y'all was in the back. Y'all was some basketball fiends, checking the Knicks score in the middle of class, you know, and as you mentioned, you're a New York City educator, and that's part of the plan. Get your degree, work in the public school system, and try to get yourself a varsity program. Mm-hmm. And you were able to do that. How did the opportunity come about?
So I remember it was the first day of school, and I'm at my job at Lincoln, you know, just, you know, orientation stuff, mm-hmm. whatever, the principal's talking, meetings and stuff. And then I get a text from Coach Baker from Dewey, mm-hmm. and I just finished working with him at LTG that prior spring and summer. So, you know, and I've known Baker since college too. Mm-hmm. So he just sent me the text like that the Wingate job was opening up and I should try to go for it. And then, you know, he just gave me the emails. I sent them away, put the good word in for me, and shout out to Coach Baker.
That's dope. When did it really hit you that, yo, I'm a head coach? Was it when they hired you? Was it the first practice, a game? When did it really hit you like, yo, I'm here?
The first game.
The first game
at John Jay. That gym is tiny, loud as hell. They packed that thing out crazy. And I remember the ball tipped off and guys started going. We scored our first point. Right. And I was just like,
I'm here.
Yo, this is it.
I'm here. So you've coached one season so far. Unfortunately, COVID took away what would have been your second year. Mm-hmm. So Taz, you're a teacher, New York City educator. What grade would you give yourself after your first season being the head varsity coach?
After my first season, I think I would probably say like a B+.
B+? Why is that?
I feel like I did all right considering I had basically, even though I had maybe two returners that got minutes the year before that had playing experience, mm-hmm. everybody was basically a new player because, you know, I wasn't doing the same things as the coach before me was. So it was basically a brand new team. And having to teach everything, like how to teach how to play man, how to teach the presses that I like to run, the offense is a real challenge. Like if you would have seen some of the games or scrimmages in the beginning of the season, we're not looking like the same team as we was towards the end of the year. So I'm just happy we was able to, you know, pull together towards the end of the year to make a little almost playoff run.
Absolutely. You know, because like you mentioned, you got the job kind of late in the process. You didn't have time to recruit and do things mm-hmm. that someone who was there for a long term would have been able to do. And I was very proud of the job that you did because, as you mentioned, it takes time to implement your system. It takes time to put your stamp on a program. But I feel the way you can judge if someone's doing a good job, you start to see that momentum shift. Mm-hmm. And you guys struggled out the gate, but towards the end of the season, you were rolling. In fact, Coach Taz and his Wingate Generals, they defeated us, John Dewey Dragons, that season. So I was very proud of the job you did, man. You did a great job.
Yeah, that was a good game. It was competitive. Because I remember we was up early, I think, and then you guys started punching back, and I think you might have took the lead, or it got close again, and then we had to get some, pull out some big, big stops and big shots. So, yeah, I mean, those early days, those early games, just getting clapped by like 20, 30. I'm just like, rough. Oh, man, it was rough. For everybody, kids, myself, assistant coach, my man, Coach Brandon. Thanks, shouts to him for helping out. Yeah, it was rough in the beginning.
You stayed the course, and
you were
able to put your stamp on the program. Mm-hmm. You, as a young leader, what is something you learned that first season? Something that stood out to you that maybe was a surprise about the job, or something you learned about yourself during that first year?
And that's a good question. Let me think.
A lot of moving parts, you know. You got coaches, you got players, you got other parents to deal with, like a lot of different moving parts. I'll say this, somebody that, as I mentioned, knew you from graduate school, and to watch you in that position, I felt like your confidence grew a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you really started to command your huddle and be the leader of that team. You know what I'm saying? So I felt you grew and developed as a young man, a young leader.
I think something that I noticed was that, you know, coming from Adams Street, which is a really high academic school, like, you know, it's real competitive to get in there. And a lot of the students, my student athletes over there, were really, like, motivated for schoolwork.
Yeah.
So coming from there and then coming to Wingate, which is more like your traditional high school, that to motivate kids to do well in school was a lot different.
Yeah.
A lot different.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's, again, just like with the basketball, it's a process. You know, it's not a switch. Like, habits, you can't just turn it on and off. You got to, you know, build it up.
Gotcha. Taz, you're from Brooklyn, right?
Yes, sir.
Born and raised.
Mm-hmm.
But your family is from where?
Morocco.
Both mom and dad?
Yes, sir.
The great country of Morocco.
Mm-hmm.
Is it fair to say that you guys are proud observers of the Islamic faith?
Definitely.
And we have a very important time coming up on the calendar for a Muslim, correct?
Big time, yep.
What's going on?
We got Ramadan coming. It's a Tuesday, I believe.
Ramadan
coming.
Coming. This year, 2021, is taking place early April.
Mm-hmm.
Taz, help me out, man. What is Ramadan?
So Ramadan is a holy month. Okay. It's a month-long celebration. It's when the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, he wrote the Quran, like God sent it to him to write. And so it's just a celebration of that. It's, you know, all Muslims, you know, over the age of puberty, like all adult Muslims, they fast. So they abstain from eating, even drinking water. I know that's like a big, like people, you know, it's always like, yo, not even water? Like, bro, I told you this last year. Yes, no water. So abstaining from food, water, you know, sex, impure thoughts. Just you keep it real. Keep it real clean for that month.
And holy.
And it's also a big part of, like, charity also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know that there's, if, like, an older person, because, you know, if you're older, you can't really fast. If you're pregnant, you can't fast. If you have some type of sickness where you need your medicine, you don't have to fast. But what people do is that they'll, you know, buy food for, you know, the poor, the homeless people in the area.
Just because abstain from food and water during
Yes.
So while the sun is up, from sunset to sunrise.
Yes, while the sun is up. So, you know, you go from sunrise to sunset, you abstain from, you know, you have your fast. And then once the sun sets, you're good to go. You can eat, you know, binge eat all you want the whole night if you can.
It's probably 1995 and, you know, basketball fan. I'm watching basketball and the announcers are telling me about Hakeem the Dream Olajuwon, Hall of Fame basketball player. He was playing for the Rockets at that time. And they mentioned, because of his religion, he's unable to drink water or eat food while the sun is up. Now, I'm 9, 10 years old. I'm like, excuse me? You mean to tell me he's running up and down the court, playing basketball, scoring points, blocking shots, wrestling other grown men for rebounds, and he can't drink water or eat food? That was the first time I was exposed to Ramadan and Islam.
Mm-hmm.
So when you talk about sport being able to impact society and teach different lessons and values and highlight different cultures, That was the first time I was exposed to Islam and Ramadan. And I've always been amazed by that level of discipline.
Yeah, that's the big key for it, is the discipline. It's crazy because, like, I feel like it kind of carries over too. Like, when I fast, I feel like, you know, my discipline in other things does better, you know, right. Like whether it's schoolwork or work, like, just, I don't know, I feel like that the laser focus comes in a lot sharper.
Makes sense. Why the fasting? Why the sacrifice? Is it like to pay homage or to pay respect or just to be like appreciative?
It's a sacrifice to God as well. And mm-hmm. also it's basically, yeah, to appreciate what you have. Mm-hmm. Cause you know, there's people that, you know, aren't able to eat 3 meals a day, 1 meal a day, you know, there's people with different circumstances all around. So it's definitely an appreciation for what you got.
When's the first time you've seen kind of Islam and Ramadan represented in sport on like maybe a mainstream level? Was it Hakeem Olajuwon for you? I know you're a little bit younger than me.
Yeah, nah, it wasn't Hakeem. I was still watching cartoons around that time. But I want to say one of the World Cups. I don't remember. I think the World Cup, what was it, 16 maybe, when like Ramadan came around summertime. Right. And then the World Cup was around. So, you know, I think Egypt might have been in it. And Morocco was in it last time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they basically there was some Muslim countries that were in the World Cup and they were fasting. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it was the World Cup is like the biggest the biggest tournament in every 4 years. That, you know, you got to go hard for the World Cup. So, you know, a couple of those countries that were playing in it, you know, they had to decide, you know, are they going to fast? Could they get an exemption? You know, did the imam say like, oh, you know what? Because another way to be exempt from fasting is if you're traveling.
Right.
I'm not sure exactly why. I think maybe because like the different time zones might throw things off, or like just, you know, traveling wears on your body a little bit. But, you know, for the traveling, and also because it's like that could bring a lot of pride for your country.
Yes.
And as long as they make it up before the next year's Ramadan, then it's all good, especially if something big time like that, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, while reading, I saw there were a few athletes that chose to pay homage and respect in other ways. Maybe they wouldn't fast. Going back to the London Olympics, I think it was 2012, the long distance runner Mo Farah, he actually went to his imam, and they allowed him to continue to train and I guess choose to fast at a different time mm-hmm. throughout that year. So that's very possible. There is some flexibility there. In fact, I was reading about Hakeem Olajuwon. Early on in his career, he didn't fast. He didn't fast during game days. He didn't fast because of travel. But he mentioned that speaking with another Muslim athlete, Mahmoud Abdul Rauf, mm-hmm. that he was, I guess, he chose to try and go the distance, try to actually do it while playing basketball. He set out that challenge for himself. Like, you know, if my Muslim brothers are doing it, still playing in the mm-hmm. NBA, I can do it too. And I'm telling you, Taz, I looked at some of his stats during Ramadan. He got busy.
I think I might have seen that same article.
He got busy. And I got a quote here. And it's something in line with what you said. You said, like, even when you were fasting, you kind of got closer spiritually, to your religion. And that invigorated you. That gave you strength. So Hakeem Olajuwon said this about fasting. He said, as for fasting, it is a spiritual mindset that gives you the stamina required to play. Through Allah's mercy, I always felt stronger and more energetic during Ramadan. So what he lacked in food and drink, like getting close to his religion, invigorated him. Man, that's special. Taz, what do you remember? You were a high school athlete here in New York City. What do you remember about going through Ramadan the first time as a young athlete?
When I was in high school, Ramadan was like, it was like during the late winters, like early springtime. So it wasn't really, it didn't really coincide with basketball mm-hmm. season. So I was okay with that. Even though, like, granted, when I was younger, you know, I couldn't just go to the park at night to go shoot around either or go work out. So, you know, for the most part, it was basically the off season for me. Mm-hmm. But like doing sports when I was a kid wasn't a priority for my parents. It was just like, yo, all right, cool, go ahead, do that. But you better do your homework. Like, right. you know, school was always first. But when I got to college was when Ramadan started creeping into the summer, back into the summertime, and I was trying out for Brooklyn College's team. So I had to work, you know, I'm a skinny guy. So, right. I had to work out. I had to get my skills right. So what I would do is I would just, you know, wake up a little bit later in the day, hang out at the house, and then I would just move all my workouts towards, like, later on in the day. So, like, I would hit the gym, lift weights in the late afternoon, go home, hang out, rest a little bit. Then I would eat, break my fast, and then I would go hit the park and, like, work on my basketball skills at night.
Okay. You mentioned, I just want to be clear for all, is Ramadan, does it take place the same time every year?
No, in Islam, they follow the lunar calendar.
Okay.
So every year it moves forward, I guess, 15 days. Like, it comes earlier and earlier every, like, 15 or so days every
so,
year.
So 2021 is going to start about April 12, 13.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe next year it might be late March, March 31st.
April 1st, yeah, something like
okay.
that.
Okay, just to be clear, okay. What do the health experts say about participating in Ramadan while being a professional athlete, college athlete, high school athlete? Like, what are the health ramifications?
So what I've seen is that, you know, if you're already a high-level athlete, if you've already been working out and you decide to fast during Ramadan, that it's cool, like, you can do that. But just as long as while your fast is broken, you're properly hydrating, probably taking care of yourself. And also, you can still adjust your workouts, just like I did when I was in college. You know, you could work out a little bit later in the day. You could work out after you break your fast, you know. And especially for high-level athletes, professionals, like, they have the time, the availability to do that. For a high school kid that's, you know, playing basketball or any sport right now, you know, similar to me, just, you know, try to get in where you could fit in, work out later on in the day, break your fast, work out after that. And it's the health benefits is fine as long as it's not like your first time working out.
Okay.
That's what I've read. So, like, you know, if you never worked out before, Ramadan might not be the best time to, you know, just kickstart your, you know, intense workouts. Maybe slowly, gradually build up, but you definitely don't want to, like, come out swinging for the fences when you're fasting for the first time.
Mm-hmm. And the abstaining from food and drink is while the sun is up. So you could get up early, 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Maybe eat a meal.
That's actually like a thing that Muslims do is called suhoor, where you wake up early in the morning, and you just have a meal and then go right back to sleep. Or you could just stay up really late. That's where, like, you know, your sleep schedule changes a little bit. So, you know, during the summer, it's more doable because, you know, you don't got school the next day, you don't got college or classes. But now school's back in school times now. So, you know, you probably got to, you know, go to bed, wake up and eat. It's probably better.
Now, Taz, for myself, young coaches around the country who have Muslim athletes on their team. You know, I know at John Dewey, we have three Muslim athletes on the squad. And because of coronavirus, we're not practicing indoors, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have high school basketball practice outside. How can I accommodate those young athletes? How can I make sure that they are safe, you know, because can we move practice up? Can we move practice later in the day? Do I give them a day off during the week? What advice would you give to young coaches who are responsible for overseeing young Muslim athletes?
I think just, first off, make sure the communication is there. Mm-hmm. Make, you know, check, you know, see how they're feeling while they're working out. I would definitely try to push workouts a little bit later on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know, especially for high school, you know, permits don't go until certain times, or if you're in a park, you don't want to be in a park too late. But if you could definitely push workouts back later on in the day, the better. And just, yeah, regular check-ins with them, like, oh, you feeling all right? If a kid needs a break, you know, give it to them. And also, depending on at what point of the season you're in, you know, if you could do less intense stuff, that would be helpful. You know, more walkthroughs, more just, you know, skill work, as opposed to, like, the intense cardio training that you would do in the beginning of the season. But similar to, like we mentioned before, how it follows the lunar calendar. So, like, right now, let's just say, for example, you're a coach and you're in mid-season and Ramadan comes about. You know, mid-season, you're probably not doing as much intense stuff as you would in the beginning of the year or before the season starts. But then next 5 years from now, it might be that Ramadan's during the preseason workouts where you got to go hard. So you just got to adjust and plan accordingly.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Because I'd be concerned, man.
I'd be nervous, too. I remember at LTG practice like 2 years ago, I noticed we had a couple Muslim athletes. I was like, oh, you're fasting this whole time. And like, we're going after
it. We're going hard.
Yeah, so I was like, oh, damn. All right. But it's cool. And also, like, those practices back at LTG, like, it would be during sunset time, too. So it would be like right before. Mm-hmm. And then once sun goes down, you know, they would just go get their water, get their little snack. I remember I used to break my fast too, because I was fasting, and I would just, you know, you'll hear half a sandwich, you know, just, you know, share.
Yeah. That's dope. Who are some of the more prominent Muslim athletes out there right now, like as far as professional level? We mentioned Hakeem of the Dream. He's retired.
Yeah, so I think Habib is just retired, but I think he's probably one of the biggest Muslim athletes.
Who's that?
Habib.
MMA fighter?
The MMA fighter from UFC.
Oh, Habib Nurmagomedov.
Yeah, yes. He's big time. He's a very devout Muslim, too. He's going to be fasting coming up on Tuesday. I know he retired. Everybody in his camp, I think, is Muslim, too, because they're all from the same, they're all family or something like that. I know we got a Queens kid that won the Slam Dunk Championship a couple years ago. Hami Diallo, I know he's Muslim.
Okay. Dennis Schroeder.
Oh, Dennis Schroeder also?
Dennis Schroeder's Muslim. Enes Kanter's from Turkey.
Oh, right.
I brought something to your attention the other day. Kyrie Irving's Twitter account. Kyrie Irving had a message, and it's probably still there because I think it's pinned to the top. Mm-hmm. And he was referring to God, and in quotations, he put Allah. Mm-hmm. Now, Taz, I've never seen anybody outside of a Muslim refer to God as Allah.
It's true.
And if you see some of the responses to his messages, it was vicious, bro. Vicious. You know, America's still got a long way to go in accepting Islam.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know what I mean? So seeing the responses to him just putting the word Allah was vicious. But Kyrie might be one.
Might be. I mean, hey, you know, just like, you know, all religions is just open arms, accepting of everybody. So, you know, that's if he's a Muslim, then cool. Welcome, brother.
That's dope. There's a few people who I think are heavily influenced by by Islam. They may have not necessarily come out and said so. Mm-hmm. Real quick, there's something. There's a cultural movement called the 5%ers. You ever heard of them?
Yeah. Okay. I think one of my homies from when I was younger, his pops is a 5%er, I believe.
5% Nation is like a cultural movement, mostly black guys. They were influenced by a gentleman by the name of Clarence 13X. Clarence 13X used to be a student of Malcolm X when he was with the Nation of Islam. So there's a heavy Muslim influence in the 5% Nation. Okay. Carmelo Anthony walks around with the 5% chain.
Oh, really?
The sign is the 7, mm-hmm. and it's like a few stars. Carmelo Anthony's been seen photographed with the 5% chain. And in fact, the number 7 is important to them. And I believe that's why Carmelo wears the number 7.
That makes sense.
The same with Kevin Durant. All right, y'all. They, when asked about these numbers, they say it's divine. Right? Again, I don't know exactly the significance of the number 7, but I believe there's some Islamic influence there. And Carmelo has actually talked about fasting before. But for all you internet sleuths, go look at Kevin Durant's Instagram page. There's a picture of like a crescent moon and a camel. And I believe that has to do with 5%ers. Nation of Islam and Islam. So that's just something to look at.
I didn't even know that. That's news to me.
They all wearing the number 7. And also, Jaylen Brown also from the Boston Celtics. He wears the number 7. I looked on his social media one time a few years ago. He was wishing folks well during Ramadan. He hasn't acknowledged his faith, but it's possible. So, you know, there's some athletes out there who may be following the path as well. It's just maybe not popular for them to come out and say so. So they choose to walk a safe line.
It could be. Because, you know, there's history with this stuff over here where, you know, you get treated a certain way because of whatever religion you are, race. So, you know, it's understandable. But, you know, you want to be proud of what you follow and what you believe in. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's on the person. I mean, I'm not knocking nobody for, you know, not wanting to divulge information.
Yeah.
Especially when you're a celebrity like that, when you're famous.
Yeah.
Cool. If you want to keep it private, more power to you.
Muhammad Ali has probably got to be the most prominent Muslim athlete of all time, right?
Definitely.
He took a lot of bow and arrows, you know.
Mm-hmm.
After winning the heavyweight championship, he converted to Islam. That's the equivalent of LeBron coming out as a Muslim tomorrow. The world wouldn't be ready for that. Nah, would it?
No way.
They wouldn't. But something significant about Muhammad Ali that I thought was cool. You know, over the last couple of years, NBA players, they opted not to visit the White House because they weren't a fan of Donald Trump. Well, I got a diary entry from, this is Ronald Reagan's diary, January 24th, 1983. You know, he's going through a couple of notes. He says his wife, Nancy, oh, she went off to New York City. We worked on a budget. And then also in that same diary entry, he says, Muhammad Ali called on me and gave me an autographed Muslim prayer book. I'm like, yo, that's dope, son. Using his platform to spread his gospel, his mission. He was on a religious crusade. A lot of people think it was about civil rights. No, he opted not to go to the war because he was a Muslim. That was against what his religion believed in. So Ali got to get a lot of credit. And I think those NBA players missed an opportunity. Because if you really believe in certain things, whether it's justice for Breonna Taylor or equality, I felt they should have went to that White House and spread that word.
That's a good point. I feel like everybody normally was just thinking like, oh, yeah, cool. You know, you don't want to go to the White House. You know, forget Donald Trump, forget the president. They don't care about you guys. So just, you know, stay, you know, don't go there if you don't want to be there.
Right.
Especially if the general consensus is that he doesn't really mess with y'all anyway.
Right.
So that's an interesting point. I never really thought of it like that, to go there and like try to spread
your word.
Yeah.
You know, it's important that we speak to people with differing opinions, you know. That platform can't be you can't bypass that. Like, you got to take advantage of that. Muhammad Ali went in the White House and gave the president a Muslim prayer book. Like, that's dope, man.
Mm-hmm.
That's dope. Taz, what changes in, I guess, the acceptance of Islam have you seen throughout your life, you know, here in America? It's not as bad as when Ali first came out or when Lew Alcindor changed his name to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Have you seen some positive steps? You know, because I was talking to you, there's a holiday around September that the New York City public schools are now acknowledging.
Remember, it's based on the lunar calendar. So, like, it started off in September, but then soon it'll be in August.
Okay.
And then, like, 10 years from now, it'll be in June. You know, like...
That's so, the end of Ramadan, correct?
It's the end of Ramadan.
What holiday is that?
It's called Eid.
Mm-hmm.
So there's two different Eids, though. So there's Eid al-Fitr, which is the one after... No, that's the separate one, where it's, like, all about, like, you know, sacrificing the sheep. And that's, like, that's the big Eid. And then there's the Eid al-Adha. I might be mixing up the names, honestly. I'm sorry. But that's the one after Ramadan. So the after Ramadan one is the celebration, you know, after fasting for 30 days, you know, you get together with your family and celebrate. So there's two separate ones. There's the one that's after Eid, and there's one that's, you know, a standalone holiday.
But that's something that the city is now acknowledging. Because I know when I went to school, that wasn't a holiday.
It wasn't. I mean, it was for me, though. I mean, yo, I was in elementary school. Yo, I'll see y'all next week.
Right.
Or, you know, the next day, whatever. Depending on what day it fell on.
So that's some progress being made.
Yeah, definitely. Giving kids the day off the whole school, the whole city a day off was, that's definitely some progress for sure.
Yeah.
You know, and it helps too. Because, you know, if you don't want to miss out on the lesson.
The schoolwork. Yeah.
On your schoolwork. When you want to celebrate your holiday with your family. So that's good that they did that.
Gotcha. Who else I got on this list? The New York Jets just got a new coach, Robert Saleh.
I'm hyped. I'm a Jets fan.
Muslim.
And it's been a long 10 years. It's been rough.
He is the first Muslim head coach in, like, pro-American sports.
Yeah, I heard. It's crazy.
That's
Wait, pro everything or just football, NFL?
Football for sure, but now that I look around,
It's probably everything.
Baseball, basketball, hockey. Yeah, like,
that makes a lot of sense.
Oh, that's a big deal.
That's a big deal.
I know prayer is an important part of the Islamic faith. Ideally, you guys would like to pray how many times?
Five times a day.
Mm-hmm. At which times of the day? Because I got a story, so please help me out. Which times of the day is it recommended that you pray?
There's two morning ones. One's like really, really early. So like, remember how I mentioned you would wake up really early to to eat before you actually fast?
Yeah.
So that's called Fajr. So that's the first prayer of the day. It's like crack of dawn, like super early. Then there's another one that's normally a couple hours later than that. And then there's the afternoon prayer. But again, it also depends on what time of September might be a different time than in January. So then there's the afternoon one, which is the third one. And then sunset time prayer. And then the evening prayer. Mm-hmm. So that's the five. And it's scattered throughout the day, basically.
Right. Enes Kanter, when he was playing for the New York Knicks, he said the Knicks had given him his own prayer room.
Oh, that's
so dope. He could step in there and take care of his business. And he was very appreciative of that. But I want to tell you this story. So I was coaching at Brooklyn College. I was an assistant coach, and we had a few Muslim players on our squad. We traveled to Buffalo. So we get to the hotel. Coach says, yo, be back down to the bus in an hour or so, so we could go to the venue to get some practice, get comfortable in this venue that we're going to be playing in the next day. So we're all in a bus and we're waiting for a few players. They're late. No word from them, nothing. And when the gentleman finally shows up, he says that he was praying. Now, is there anything that we could have done as a group to make that situation better? You know, because I was a little bit frustrated because I felt he could have expressed to us, hey, I need to pray at this time. So maybe we could have moved the bus time up earlier. We could have made it later. Like, is there flexibility in the prayer? Like, how could I have handled that? How could we all have handled that situation maybe a little bit better?
I mean, there's definitely flexibility. You know, if you're working and you got, like, you literally can't get out your seat or you can't get off of a bus or whatever, like, you know, you could just do it a little bit later on when you get the chance to. But, you know, I think it's just more about the communication and, like, willingness to do it.
Right.
You know, so now, you know, at first you guys didn't even realize it wasn't a normal thought process, but now you know, right?
Now
so
know.
Now next time, if you know you got some Muslim student athletes on your team and you know you're about to get on a bus at sunset time, maybe you let them know, like, oh, you know, or try to schedule something directly after or maybe to where you could get to the spot before the time. And, yeah, it's all about just, you know, just knowing, just learning about it, you know, just learning about the different culture of, not culture, excuse me, I'm messing up right now.
Customs.
Customs of the religion. So, and it's funny because I remember when I was, you know, growing up in my neighborhood, you know, there wasn't too many Muslim kids, but there were some.
Right.
And like, we was all cool with each other, like the Muslim kids, the Spanish kids, Chinese kids, whatever. Like, it was all good. We all played ball. Didn't matter. Nothing else mattered. So like one of my older homies from the area was like, I remember he told me something about Islam that I was just like, yo, I didn't even know that. Like, what? And it's because one of his best friends, another kid that I knew, was a Muslim too, and they've been friends since they was little. So he just knew about it from his friend, and then you know it's all love. So that's same similar to what you guys could do with at Brooklyn or do we now? Mm-hmm. Just you know, as long as you know and you spread the information and you just help out, it's cool. It's all love.
That's what's up, man. Now, I've always been trying to learn, man. I've always been fascinated. Like I told you, Hakeem the Dream Olajuwon, I was fascinated. Like, what? He's running up and playing basketball without drink and food. I thought it was phenomenal. And the more I learn about the faith, it's about peace. It's about taking care of one another.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's dope, man. Who can't get behind that? Who can't get behind that? Nike has some products for the females, Muslim athletes. They have like a sport hijab. I saw a Nike swimsuit that is less revealing, you know, trying to pay respect to the culture. How is that stuff received in the Muslim community? Is it supported?
I believe it's supported.
Yeah.
Because, you know, what everybody wants to, you know, participate in sports for the most part. Yeah. So if it helps ease that for the athletes, then I believe it's supportive. From what I've heard, you know, I didn't really, like, get on the internet and read the reviews or anything. But from what I see, I can't see how it couldn't be.
We still got a long way to go. Like I mentioned, the backlash from Kyrie Irving's just tweet, just mentioning the word Allah was vicious, bro. I wouldn't even repeat it. What are some things or some steps you would like to see America take, some of these pro sports leagues, to pay respect and accommodate and acknowledge and make that culture and religion feel that they're part of this ride also? Because we go back to Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf.
Oh, yeah, he was getting...
He didn't want to stand for the national anthem. He got ousted because of that. You know, he said, instead of the anthem, I want to pray. And before you know it, his career was over real quick. You know, and he says that's, he believes that's because of his devotion to Islam. You know, again, things have changed a great deal from there, but we still got a long way to go. So what are some things you think we could change or you'd like to see happen?
I think these people just got to get comfortable around different people, really. That's the real root of it. You know, like, so if somebody's a different religion from what you follow or follow something different, like, they still got the same amount of legs as you, still got the same fingers, like, you know, just be accepting of what they got, of what they follow, and just, you know, normal. I don't think it's as like, different. Mm-hmm. You know, we all people.
The World Cup is taking place in Qatar next year. Did you see that?
It was supposed... I mean, when was the last World Cup?
2018.
Oh, well, I'm thinking about the Olympics that got canceled because of COVID then, right? Yeah. Oh, in Qatar? It's going to be hot.
And, you know, Qatar is a Muslim state.
Mm-hmm.
And the director of the World Cup was a Muslim gentleman. He said, listen, alcohol ain't a part of our lifestyle, you know?
It's true.
He said, but hospitality is. So they have to make some accommodations with the alcohol. Because usually in Qatar, there is what's called the sin tax. Alcohol is a bit more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to partake in that stuff, you have to pay what's called a sin tax. But they're alleviating that for the Europeans that are going to come in to watch the World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they're sectioning off different areas for people to consume alcohol. They're extending happy hours at certain hotels for the Europeans and folks that consume alcohol. But they're asking those people that come into the country to be respectful of our culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that was just another instance where I saw Islam and sport colliding and adjustments needed to be made.
Yeah, it's true. And it's funny because I know some delis in the area, like some of like really halal with it, where there's no pork in the grill, there's no beer in the fridge. So, yeah, it's funny you mentioned that I just realized, like, oh, because I know the deli I go to by my job, they hold it down. They don't have pork on the grill. So right. I'm like, yo, I'm going there all the time, man.
That's dope, man. That's dope, man. Taz, you got anything else?
Nothing. I'm just trying to see what's going on with sports. I mean, I know PSL just opened up. Sadly, Wingate won't be participating. I gotta try to find an empty park or something, do something. It's getting rough.
Yeah, right now in the city with PSEL and the sports, the high school sports, some schools are participating, some are not. Taz's Wingate basketball team and their program, they won't be participating in the post-pandemic sports. So he's a coach without a team right now, but he's going to figure it out. Taz, thanks for coming out. Everybody watching and getting ready to observe the holy month, I would say Ramadan Mubarak. Taz, did I get it right?
You're good, man.
Yes.
Got it.
But in all seriousness, man, just if I got anything wrong or misspoke, I'm still just a humble student trying to learn, trying to get better.
It's all good. Me too. I probably said a couple wrong things too. So it's all good. We all here learning. Everybody got to learn no matter where you're at. Thanks for having me, though.
Yeah, I appreciate you, man. I wish you well during this holy month, man. And thanks for stopping by, man. I'm your host, William Holly. That's WBH Radio. We out.